श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नित्यानंद नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौर भगवती चरण निर्विशेष सुंदर पश्चि देश ओम ज्ञानत विनंद सिराजन सुलभय सबसे सुंदर तंजीर तस्मय श्री गुरुवे नमः श्री चैतन्य वरपिष्टम स्थापितम जैन भूतलये सारयाम रूप कदमयम ददति सापदर्दिकम मन सकापत्रिभ्यश्च कृपसंयोगयेभ्यश्च पथिकरम पदनेभ्यो Yesterday we heard how Krishna left his palaces, his 16,108 palaces, and mounted his chariot with Dhruka, using Dhruka's hand as his platform on which he mounted. And then he sat there with, anyone remember who he was on the chariot with other than Dhruka? Raise your hand, though. Yeah, you have to raise your hand and wait a moment. Yeah, yeah. Uddhav and Satya. Did you call out? Okay, be careful. I'm only joking, by the way. And then they, all the 16,108 Krishnas became one, and they went, and Krishna went into the assembly hall, and he was so effulgent, and the atmosphere in the assembly hall filled with very powerful Yadava warriors was very, it was very uplifting. They themselves were all powerful, and suddenly, the chokidar, the doorkeeper, announced that a person who was unknown wished to enter, and Krishna gave permission to enter. So he entered, and immediately Kritanjali, he offered his respects because he was in the presence of Krishna and the Yadavas. He was in the presence of power, and respectfully did anjali, and also when we do pushpanjali, this is the anjali, and we take flowers and put it in our hands like this, and that's how we offer them, by the way. And the messenger began to speak, and he explained who he was carrying the message from. He was carrying the message from some kings. 20,000 kings who had been imprisoned by powerful Darasandha, and they were experiencing so much misery because of that. And he bowed down to Krishna. This is the verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was in the presence of his Lord. And with joined palms, he described to the Lord how a number of kings were suffering because Jarasandha had imprisoned them. Yeja dig vijayai tasya sanatim na jajor nripa. The kings, they were imprisoned because the Jarasandha was going around the world and conquering. And Yudhisthira, interesting enough, Yudhisthira Maharaj will also do the same thing when he performs the Rajasuya sacrifice, when he desires to perform that sacrifice. So Jarasandha, in one sense, was the competition. And those kings, they did not accept to be subservient, to be below Jarasandha. They would not pay tribute to him. And he captured them, and he put them in his prison. And they were feeling miserable. But why didn't they become subservient to him? And the reason was they were devotees. And he, Jarasandha, was especially giving them trouble, our acharyas will say, because they were devotees of Krishna. They had surrendered to him. In addition, he wanted to increase sacrificing these, he wanted 100,000 kings to sacrifice, make human sacrifices to Kali Bhairav. And this way he was thinking that he would increase his power. The other word is Ayuta Dve, 10,000 times 2 kings were imprisoned in a fortress, almost like a cave known as Girivraj, but it has nothing to do with our Giriraj. So here is the BBT purport on this. Just give me a moment here, please. The BBT purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that these kings refuse to the payment of tribute in other forms of submission to Zarasandha, because they had given themselves to Krishna already. And there is a well-known account in the Mahabharata and other literatures that Zarasandha desired to worship Mahabhairav, Kali Bhairav, by offering the lives of these 100,000 kings in sacrifice. So that king, that messenger, was carrying a message to Krishna, who they were devoted to, from those suffering kings. And they're expressed in just 6 verses in the Bhagavad Gita. So the first verse was one of acknowledging Krishna's position. Krishna, Krishna, prameyatmam, oh unlimited absolute Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, the messenger called out to Krishna on behalf of these kings. You are immeasurable. You are the soul who is unmeasurable. We say that we ourselves, the soul is 10,000, the tip of a hair in size. But Krishna is a soul also, but immeasurable. He is the Paramatma. They were acknowledging that. Prapana vaya banjana, that we are surrendering to you. Prapana vaya fear banjana. We are surrendering to you to break our fear. We are in anxiety because of Jarasandha's plans. We're in anxiety being captured. Being captured means you're at the mercy of someone. And when one is captured by Jarasandha, one is at the mercy of someone who is merciless. So they were in anxiety. Prapana, Baya, Banjana, and they took shelter of Krishna. Vayam Tvam Sharanam Javo, we have come to you for shelter. Sharanam again for shelter. Bhava Bhita Pitagdhya. Pitagdhya means a mentality that keeps one somewhat separate from Krishna. They were devotees, but they were not on the most exalted platform at all, because they were taking shelter of Krishna, not out of love. They were not coming to him out of great, great devotion, but rather out of their fear of bhava, of material existence, despite the fact that they had a mentality that was pritagtiya, that they had a mentality that they were seeing themselves as separate from Krishna, because the purest of devotees sees themselves connected to Krishna in service, and that is their identity. So these souls, devotees as they were, didn't have the perfect identity. Here is the translation. The king said, this is the first verse of their submission to Krishna, through their messenger, oh Krishna, oh Krishna, oh immeasurable soul, oh destroyer of fear for those who are surrendered to you. Despite our separatist attitude, despite our not being fully in harmony with you, we have come to you for shelter out of fear of material existence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, he puts the words of the kings in his own words, but it's the words of the king. Out of fear, we know that you are the protector of those surrender to you, prapana. And therefore, we surrender to you. Neglecting a prayer for devotion to you. Because when we approach Krishna and open our hearts, we sometimes pray what we are supposed to pray, what we think is the highest prayer. But sometimes we just tell Krishna about our anxieties, of what's really going on in our life. Or sometimes we express that, just save me from this situation, I'm actually afraid. So these kings being in such a difficult situation, Jarasandha wasn't feeding them, he wasn't clothing them, they couldn't bathe. They were in such a difficult situation and always filled with fear. Instead of praying for pure devotion, they say, we instead are intent on deliverance from our own suffering. So what's the difference between one type of a prayer and another? The difference is simply who is in the center. If Krishna is in the center, it's one level of prayer, one level of devotional service. But if I am in the center, it's still affected by false ego or pritadhiya. So we have intelligence separated from you, pritadhiya, with our own interests. And Srila Jiva Goswami comments, he asks the question, what is the cause of their fear? What is the cause of your fear that you're expressing? He says, our intelligence is separated from you. We are devoid of bhakti. Now, immediately we are entering into the deep waters of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy of what surrender means. There's one verse in the 11th canto, Vayam Vitiya Vinaveshita Syad, that fear is actually caused by seeing something, any situation, anything, any person, with, in any way, other than being in relationship to Krishna. Anything other than, seeing anything other than being in relationship to Krishna will cause us fear. Now this theme, and its rectification, and its cure, will be one of the main themes of the chapters that we will speak about, of the verses that we will speak about. And the difference between a pritadhiya, a mentality, where we are seeing things, especially ourselves, as separate from Krishna, and a mentality of deeper devotion, where we see everything in relationship to Krishna, everything in relationship to Krishna, every situation, when we see something separate from Krishna, we are objectifying it. It is an object. It is an object ultimately to be enjoyed. And that is what causes us fear in this world. So there are non-devotees who see only in that way. They see everything is separate from Krishna. Atheistical viewpoint. It is something very special, actually, even to be a theist. One current very intelligent philosopher, he said, contemporary Western psychologist, actually, he said, I hate when people ask me, do you believe in God? Because, he said, do you know what it means to say that I believe in God? It means that you have to completely give yourself to him. He understood this point. So he wasn't arrogant in the sense that I believe completely. To believe means you believe completely. It's not like you half believe and half don't believe. You know, if you half don't believe means that you don't quite trust that he's really there and that it's safe to give myself to him. So then if we don't think it's safe to give ourselves to him, do we actually believe he's there? Do we believe that there's a supreme, even father, Vijapada Pita, who's going to take care of us? Or if he has the power? power to take care of us, but look at what the situation these kings are in. They're devotees, but they're trapped in the claws. 20,000 of them. Just imagine how powerful Gerasandha is, because kings are kings. Gerasandha captured 20,000 of them and put them in a prison. He is powerful. And there they were, helpless. So the question always comes in my mind, well, what do I do when I'm helpless? Which direction do I turn in? So then after expressing that, their first approach to Krishna, they describe what their fear is. People in this world, and this is the essence of material existence, is that mayam dvitiya vinivesha tasya. It is fear. The essence of material existence is fear, because when we bhuleshe jiv anadi mahamu, when we turn our back on Krishna, immediately we are fearful. Why? Anyone like to raise their hand and say why they think we are fearful when we turn our back on Krishna immediately? Yes. We have no protector. And who are we relying on to protect ourselves? And who are we imagining is the center of existence and competing with so many other people who are imagining themselves the center of existence and the enjoyers? It's a world full of competition, and we have to, when we're just individuals living in the bubble of our false ego, there must be great fear, because we are alone in there, practically speaking. I always say this. We're alone imagining ourselves the center of existence, but we can't convince even one other person that we're the center of existence. No wonder we're so afraid. I'm thinking I'm this and I'm that, but so is everyone else thinking like that, and no one's thinking. I once went to, many years ago, I went into a university professor's office, and university professors all over the world, and this was in Malaysia, they always have these little sayings put up on the wall to remind them of one thing or another, some wisdom. So this one saying on this professor's wall remains with me to this day. In my mind, it's wisdom. He said, or it said on the wall, I used to worry about what people were thinking about me, until I realized that no one was thinking about me. They were only thinking about themselves. So, fear, bhava-bhita, you're approaching Krishna out of fear of material existence. So here they're going to describe their fear, why it's there. People in this world are always engaged in sinful activities and are thus bewildered about their real duty, which is to worship you according to your commandments. The Sanskrit is according to your words, which is Savadaman Pratyaja Omanmanam Bhavamad Bhakto. So turning their back on the words of Krishna, on what spiritual life of what religion actually is, always engaged in activities that are harmful for themselves, with themselves as imagining themselves as enjoyers. They avoid your words, and this activity of giving themselves and following your words, the kings say, would truly bring them good fortune. Let us offer our obeisances to the all-powerful Lord, who appears as time. Now, remember this point, because it comes up again. Let us offer our obeisances unto the all-powerful Lord, who appears as time. And suddenly, cuts down one's stubborn hope for a long life in this world. Of course, we know that that's the greatest mystery and the most wonderful thing is that everyone thinks that they will live forever, even though we know we're not, but yet we think we will. And what do we do while we live in this way? We see things as separate from Krishna, and without devotion, we try to enjoy those things, but we don't see that time is stalking us. That is why we're afraid. So one may ask, what has caused them to change their minds and send a messenger to Krishna when they're in this dangerous situation right now? What has caused them to change from a mood of, I am truly the enjoyer, Ishvara Mahambogi? And the answer that Jiva Goswami gives from their mouths is, it is not possible for us to give up this strong desire to enjoy separately from you, which binds us, ties us to what is inauspicious, asu, bad for us. It binds us to what causes us trouble and difficulty, birth, death, old age, disease, etc., and we can't give it up. Thus, for this reason that we are caught by our desires, we avoid surrendering to you, Jiva Goswami says. You, we avoid surrendering to, but you can cut these desires. You are so strong, you can cut our material attachments. And we offer respects to you, who is unlike us, different from us, who are inattentive. Why are we inattentive? Especially some of us may have this habit in our japa. We're inattentive, and they're going to explain the cause, because we are distracted by our strong desires. But now, we turn to you because of fear. And now, because of our fear, we're eager to worship you. That was the comment of Srila Jiva Goswami. They explain more about Krishna. You are the predominating Lord of the universe, and you have descended into this world with your personal power. Now, our acharyas give two meanings to his descent. They're saying that what they mean when they say you have descended into this world with your personal power means, one meaning was Baladev, and the other was time again, Kalosmin, Lokachaya, time, your personal power of time. You have descended in this world with your personal power to protect the saintly and to suppress the wicked. But, and this I found very interesting in their prayers amongst quite a few wonderful and interesting things, but since you've descended into this world and we've trusted and we've heard that you've descended in this world to protect those who are pious, to protect your devotees. What verse in the Bhagavad Gita? And Yadaya Dharidama Shah. Same mood. You've come in this world to protect your devotees. But we can't understand, O Lord, how anyone can transgress, cross, break all your laws as Jarasandha has broken your laws. He's so envious of the devotees. He's fighting even with you. Again and again and again, O Lord. But that person still continues to enjoy the fruits of his work. And we, who are your devotees, are suffering. They were doubting. is this really true that you always protect your devotees and that you destroy the wicked? You've come to this world with Balaram as time. If we don't get protection from you, O Lord, then should we really surrender to you? Either you don't want to protect us or you don't have the power to protect us. But that's not their prayer exactly. That's the doubts that come into the mind. That why has this happened? Why has this happened to me? It shouldn't be like this, is our conclusion. And this is going to be answered. This very, very difficult question, in one sense, that is a seed of doubt. Is Krishna really going to protect me? And if we're not really convinced... a few more coughs of agreement. If Krishna isn't really going to protect me, either because he doesn't care, or he's not powerful enough, or there's so many people in every temple and church in the world praying for something from him, and I'm just one of a billion or 2 billion or 3 billion. Will he even hear my words? Will he even listen to me? How is it possible that Jarasandha is continuing to enjoy? It's like it seems in this world, practically speaking, that especially if you are brave enough to look at a newspaper or no one looks at newspapers anymore, but it's frightening. Evil seems to be winning. And the world is on the nuclear war can happen, this, that. People are being killed all over, innocent people, having nothing to do with politics, practically speaking. So they have a doubt in this way. It's not major in the sense. I remember some years ago there was a big earthquake in the ocean near Indonesia, and also it hit, I think, Chennai, the tsunami. You remember that? That was some years ago. And then 10,000 people died in the tsunami that followed, and so many people became atheists because of that. Have they forgotten that of the 6 billion people in this world, 6 billion who are alive now, in 100 years from now, probably none of them will still be alive? So if why, how could God do this? Well, how could he do that? Including each and every one of us. So they ask this question, but they're taking shelter of Krishna. They have that faith that they're taking shelter of Krishna, but they're asking the question. The BBT purport quotes from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book on this. My dear Lord, how is it possible that miscreants like Jarasandha can put us into such a deplorable, terrible condition of life? It must be against your authority. We are puzzled at the situation, and we cannot understand how it is possible. It may be that Jarasandha has been deputed to give us trouble because of our past misdeeds, but we have heard from revealed scriptures that anyone who surrenders unto your lotus feet immediately becomes immune to the reactions of his sinful life. So how is it possible? But what do they do? Prabhupada says, we therefore wholeheartedly offer ourselves unto your shelter. And we hope that your lordship will now give us full protection. They are devotees. Now there are read 3 verses from Gopal Champu, which Srila Jiva Goswami, that also similarly describe the situation. We committed a shoreless ocean of sins. In our imagination, we saw that you had faults. That Krishna quite hasn't figured out who should be suffering and who should be enjoying. Just imagine if everyone who did something wrong suffered immediately, and everyone who did something right enjoyed immediately and had success. Now there'd be a lot more devotees than demons if that were the case. So maybe we should send emails to Krishna and say, I have a better idea how you should run material existence, because in this way, is our better idea actually a better idea? But that's the way the materialistic mind works. I have a better idea than Krishna how things should be. And the surrendered soul, and there are subtleties in this, but the surrendered soul just trying to, okay, see how surrendered I'm going to be if the light doesn't come on. How about if it goes on and off? That would be exciting. And off and on and off and on and off and on. It's playing with you. When you pick it up, it stops. Sometimes. Let's keep it out of our eyes for a moment. Thank you. Gopal Champa, rephrasing this. We committed a shoreless ocean of sins. In our imagination, we thought we saw that you had faults, O Krishna. Supreme Personality of Godhead. You protect the entire world. Why do you allow a sinful Jarasandha to torment us? In this life, we have not been purely devoted to you. We did not take shelter of you and surrender unto you. Alas, greedy for the pleasures, because this is the reason why they say that they didn't surrender to Krishna. We are greedy for the pleasures that come from being king. We were always very proud. We were arrogant. We were bewildered by your illusory potency, Maya, O Lord. You protect all who take shelter of your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord, please deliver us from the prison of Jarasandha. So they had a plan prescribed what was best. And what was their plan? What was their prescription? What was the disease, the problem that they saw? We are imprisoned by Jarasandha. And what were they coming to Krishna for? I'm almost hearing someone say it. Okay, raise your hand to make it easier if you wish to. Yes. Deliverance. Yes, exactly. From what specifically? From Jarasandha's prison. They have decided what is best, and it's quite natural. I find myself doing the same thing all the time. I have a cut here, please cure my cut. I don't have this. There's a traffic light, but I'm driving and it's red and I want it to be green, perhaps, or so many things, one after the next. I have a plan. See, the Jiva Goswami comments on the verse. Even to this day, we have not completely given up Maya. Having lost our intelligence by your Maya, we suffer. Because we carry the burden of this body, which is like an unconscious corpse. Do you ever think of your body as an unconscious corpse? Not usually, I would think. But we suffer by constant fear of sickness and time. We don't know what the future is going to bring. We suffer from fear of time. We suffer by constant fear of sickness and time, which are like ghosts and spirits that subtly always come to our consciousness. We think, I'm not going to think like that again, but it comes back, the thought comes back again and again. And then when they ask, verse 1. He says, why do you carry this burden? And his answer is, because we enjoy the situation somehow or another. The situation I'm in, I have a hope to enjoy it. We're kings. We do not reject the burden even now because we want to attain the position of a king. This is to be condemned, they say. And this happiness is not real because it is like a dream. It is not, doesn't have true substance. And it is filled with misery. That would be all right if that was all that there was, a difficult situation, and I'm in a difficult situation, so let me enjoy it as much as I can. But to enjoy this miserable situation, we have given up the highest happiness, which is described in all Shastra scriptures. This happiness is not dependent on other things, since it manifests on its own within the soul. It can be obtained from you by your devotees. That was Srila Jiva Goswami's comment. So now there are two more verses in their prayers. That was the first four. Therefore, since your feet relieve the sorrow of those who surrender to them, please release us prisoners from the shackles of karma, our karma, manifested by the king of Magadha, or as the king of Magadha, as Dharasana. He is the form of our karma. Our karma is behind, and our karma is holding the stick, and he is the stick that is beating us. So we don't exactly blame the stick. We blame our karma. This is what they're saying. Wielding alone the prowess of 10,000 maddened elephants, he's so powerful, he has locked us up in his house, just like a lion captures sheep. And we understand that if it wasn't our karma, he wouldn't have the power to have captured us, but yet please release us. And then the final verse here. O wielder of the disc, your strength is unlimited. They have that faith. Your strength is unlimited. And the 17 times you crushed Jarasandha in battle. But then, absorbed in human affairs, you allowed him to defeat you. Just once. But now, because you have acted as Ranthor, you have fled the battlefield. But now he has become so proud that he dares to torment us, who are your subjects, who are your devotees. O unconquerable one, O Ajita, please fix this broken situation. BBT purport, Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book is again quoted. My dear Lord, we know very well that Jarasandha cannot defeat you at any time because of your power, your strength, your resources, and your authority. They're unlimited. No one can equal you. No one can surpass you. The appearance of defeat by Jarasandha in the 18th engagement is nothing but an exhibition of your human-like behavior. But unfortunately, foolish Jarasandha could not understand your tricks, and he has since then become so proud and puffed up over his material power and prestige. And because of this, he has arrested us, and he has imprisoned us, and he knows fully that we are your devotees, and that we are under your, you are our king. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur even comments that your enemy, Jarasandha, he knows that we have surrendered to you, and therefore, because he knows we are devotees, he now persecutes us more and more every day. So then the messenger concluded, those were the prayers of the king asking for Krishna to help. And remember, he's sitting in this huge Sudama assembly hall. And he's effulgent, and the Yadus are there. And everything is centered around Krishna. And his effulgence is filling the hall. So the messenger concludes by saying, Iti Mananta Samta, these imprisoned kings by Tarasandha, Bhava Darshana Kamchina, they're anxious. They're anxious for what? They're awaiting your darshan. They want to see you. Prapanna padamulam te dinanam sam vidiyatam. Please bestow your mercy on them because they have surrendered fully to your lotus feet. Jiva Goswami says, these kings, this is the summary of the messengers, these kings are suffering greatly and are surrendered to you because they're in prison and Girivraja, like children, they hanker to see you. Not only should you free them, but you should also show yourself to them. At this time, please bestow good fortune on these suffering kings. Now, this is the beginning of a Bhagavad Gita in one sense, but there are so many twists and turns in this amazing pastime. Now, let's just take, there's another section that comes up right now, but just small groups of 3, 4, 5, or even 2, and just discuss what you heard and what you think about the situation and the consciousness of these imprisoned kings, just for a short amount of time. Go ahead, please. Just find a group. It helps if the group speaks the same language as you speak. What do you think? What do you identify with? Okay. Now, just after this messenger had entered the great assembly hall, Suddenly, an effulgent person appeared. And that effulgent person was Narada Muni. Matajis, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol, Hare Sivade, Maragiraj, Maragiraj. You're so involved, Harmash. But did you know that Narada Muni has just come? And interestingly enough, because that, just imagine, in the assembly of Yadus, who are all warriors, these kings had come to Krishna for protection. And the Yadus, they loved to fight. They were warriors. So their mood was as excited as yours was over there. And they were talking, yes, immediately. But suddenly, this effulgent figure descends. Narada Muni. And our acharyas say that Krishna had increased his effulgence even, perhaps to get the attention of the Yadu warriors, but so that when people would listen very carefully what he said. Now I'm going to, before we hear the exchange between Narada Muni and Sri Krishna, I want to give you a hint that will really help you pierce through this pastime. So far, what have we seen Krishna do? Raise your hand. Raise your hand. And yes. He entered and he listened to the message. That's all. And what, this is a simple type of a question, What did Krishna descend with? Does anyone remember his potency? Yes. Balaram or time factor. Now, what is the time factor? This is Krishna. Kalosmin, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Lokachaya Kriyat. What is the significance of the time factor? This is a question that's, I have something specific in my mind. So it's always hard to answer a question where someone has something very specific in his mind and they haven't told you first what it was. But anyone want to venture a guess? What is the specific? Yes. It destroys everything. Yes. Have a good afternoon, everyone. But what else about time? Yes. Changes, yes. But what else about time? All correct. Yes. Fear of losing time. Yes. Yes. And his desires get fulfilled. Yes. Karma. You can't control it. But there's something a little more different than we usually think about it. Yes, all correct, but it works in an imperceptible way. When I hadn't seen Sachinanda Maharaj because of COVID for 3 years, but he saw me, he said, "Bhajan, you've matured." In his gentle, manly way. Because it moves very, very subtly, time. And we don't notice it. And therefore, it stalks us. And it is very dangerous for that reason. Because it destroys, it must destroy everything in the material realm. And we don't even notice its movements. That's one thing to understand. A view of this pastime. And the other thing is to keep your eye on Krishna. And he, like time, is going to do everything. But you're not going to see him do it. Except for one thing. See him do. And that we'll see soon, but not today, soon. Narada Muni appeared, so effulgent. He had a mass of hair, and it was golden. It was matted. And he entered the assembly hall like the sun, glowing. Lord Krishna is the worshipable master, this is text 33, of even the planetary rulers like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Yet, as soon as he saw Narada Muni had arrived, he joyfully, not dutifully, but on the appearance of a sage, a holy person who was so wise and knew everything, he joyfully stood up along with his ministers and secretaries to receive that great sage and offer his respectful obeisances by bowing his head. Krishna himself, the supreme personality of Godhead, once seeing the Brahmin sage Narada Muni, stood up with joy and bowed his head. So, of course, we know that Krishna was teaching for this. How to respect Brahmanas. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that. And after Narada Muni had accepted the seat offered to him, Lord Krishna honored the sage according to scriptural injunctions, washed his feet, offered arti, and he satisfied him of reverence, and he spoke the following truthful and pleasing words. Now sometimes it is difficult to speak truthful words. And speak pleasing words. But to speak truthful and pleasing words at the same time is even more difficult. And that's what Krishna did. He saw Narada Muni. And he spoke truthful and pleasing words. Now, what is Krishna going to say? What is Narada Muni going to hear from the mouth of Krishna? Krishna says, and Krishna, again, is going to be clever Krishna. It is certain that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear. For that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travels at will throughout all the worlds. Truthful and pleasing. Now, what did he just say? What is he saying at this specific time as to Narada Muni's characteristic? What does Narada Muni have the power to do because he's a great sage? What does he have the power to do? Take away fear. And this is what sages do. They give one of the greatest gifts that can be had in material existence. Because material existence has as its essence, as we said, fear. So the kings are caught by one thing, and because they were trying to enjoy it. And of course, I'm not caught by anything in any situation, even in prison, because I'm trying to enjoy it. And that is the cause of my fear. And time is moving very, very subtly and slowly, causing fear. And the sages, they take away fear. And we'll see in time, as we hear, how they do it. But Krishna's going to do everything in a very, very subtle way. And he's going to explain this. Krishna said, next verse. There is nothing unknown to you within God's creation. In the whole universe, you've traveled all over the universe. You know everything. Nothing is unknown to you. Therefore, please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do. Interesting. He knows everything. And this is what he asks. Why? Because Narada knows everything, but Krishna also knows everything. But he asks specifically about this. He doesn't do anything. He asks. Jiva Goswami says, comments, he asked Narada about the activities of the Pandavas. Now, what do we gather from this? Of all the things in the universe, this is what the Supreme Lord wants to hear about the Pandavas. Amongst everything, Jiva Goswami continues, among everything in creation, Krishna has personal interest in the Pandavas. A simple statement. Pass right over it. I already know that. In the frame of reference, within the pastime of the kings being afraid, within the pastime of our own lives, being afraid of whether Krishna cares, perhaps. Does he notice us? Does he see of the prayers of thousands and millions of others? Am I significant? Significant enough for him to put his consciousness on me? Krishna has personal interest in the Pandavas. Why? Because they are devotees. They have given everything to Krishna. Simple point. Subtle. Well, that depends on how we hear it and whether we learn from these past times. Or we can just become entertained by the stories, but if we become only entertained by the stories, how many times will we read them before we think that I already know this? But if we understand that Shastra is deep, and it has unlimited hidden meanings, unlimited hidden relevant meanings for our lives that will bring us to Krishna, that will award us with gifts, with jewels, with wonderful jewels. Krishna cares amongst all the things in this amazing universe. Krishna cares for the Pandavas and wants Narada. Even though he knows everything, he's asking Narada to tell him about the Pandavas. And now Narada responds to that seemingly simple request. He says, I've seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya. No one can understand. Please, please, please. I'm also very much speaking to myself. No one can understand. I've seen your insurmountable power of your Maya, Almighty One, by which you bewilder even the creators of the universe, including Lord Brahma. No one can understand what Krishna is going to do. Even Brahma. Maya is like a curtain. It's Yoga Maya that we know, but Krishna covers his internal leelas, his internal pastimes, so no one can understand exactly what's going to happen. So therefore it's exciting to Krishna and so exciting to all the devotees as they deal with Krishna and as the ecstasies of their relationship with Krishna. No one can understand what's going to happen next. Or what Krishna will do especially. Or how Krishna will react to what happens next. But also, he covers everyone in this world. We can say he covers everyone in this world, but we can say that when we turn our back on Krishna, I love to do this in a class, when I turn my back on you now, can I say that I'm covering my view of you, or Maya is covering my view of you? Isn't it funny when someone turns their back on you, by the way? It's so peculiar. It's so insulting, and it affects us. Excuse me, give us much. I'm going to do this just for your pleasure. Isn't it weird? That's why, of course, we don't put our backs to Giriraj. So is it, how much is it Krishna that's covering my view? Or is it how much, is it me who's covering my view? Well, Krishna's Maya covers us, according to how much we turn our back on him. And that is what sadhana bhakti's purpose is, Srila Jiva Goswami explains in Bhakti Siddhava. Sadhana bhakti is to turn, the process of turning to Krishna the person. So I have seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya. Please put on cow ringtone. It's much nicer. By which you bewilder even the creator of the universe, Brahma. Oh, all-encompassing Lord, it does not surprise me. What? That you're disguising yourself by your own energies while moving amongst the created beings? As fire covers its own light with smoke, you are the Supreme Lord. In fact, in the previous chapter, in the 69th chapter of the 10th canto, Narada Muni has traveled to 16,000 palaces of Krishna and seen 16,000 Krishnas interact with 16,108 queens, each one doing something different. He's seen this. He's seen this, and he's accepted that I cannot understand Krishna and how he acts and why he acts. So therefore he says, I've seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya, and now I'm seeing it again, because there you are, the Supreme Lord, the all-knowing creator, destroyer, etc., 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 whose energies are spread everywhere, and you're asking me how the Pandavas are? So what exactly is going on here? But I've given up trying to understand what exactly is going on here. I'm just, and this is one of the most important points in the whole pastime that we're going to hear, and I'm wondering if I should reveal it to you now or let you find out for yourselves later. I'll save. If it's for me, tell them I'm busy. Just escaped out of that puzzle, didn't I? No, I'll tell you that. No, I'll just wait till Narada Muni says it himself. I've seen this. You've covered, just like fire covers itself with its own smoke, your Maya covers exactly what you're doing, and no one can understand it. No one can understand the purposes of Krishna as he does things and how he's going to do it. From the BBT purport, Narada understood that Lord Krishna desired to kill Jarasandha and was thus beginning to arrange for this pastime by inquiring from Narada about the Pandavas' intentions. Krishna wanted this done, and he's inquiring about that. And Narada, being an exalted soul, understood what Krishna was doing. Understanding the Lord's own intention, Narada was not astonished when the Lord humbly requested information from him. He continues, Narada continues, who can properly understand your purpose? No one. Consider that when you're in a situation that you don't like Jarasandha's kings that were captured. Just consider this point. No one can understand the purpose of Krishna. With your material energy, you expand and also withdraw the creation. This entire creation tonight, look up at the stars. It's huge. Look in depth at anything. It's unfathomable. No one can understand actually anything. When the scientists open one door and they say, I understand, be sure that 20 doors remain locked for them when they open that one door. No one can understand what's going on in the creation, either in its macrocosm or microcosm. You expand and also withdraw the creation. It's destroyed, which appears to have substantial existence. Obeisance is to you, whose transcendental past position is inconceivable. The living being, caught in the cycle of birth and death, does not know how he can be delivered from the material body. Now please listen to this, because Narada is going to say something very, very important that reveals very much why Krishna acts the way he does in his leelas. The living being caught in the cycle of birth and death, he does not know how he can be delivered from the material body, which brings him so much trouble. But you, the Supreme Lord, descend to this world in various personal forms. Now, what was the other form that we heard that Krishna descended in? As time. But here is something different. He descends in his personal forms. By performing your pastimes, you illumine, brighten the soul's path, which is darkness. No one can see their way out themselves. But Krishna's pastimes provide light, illumination, so we can see. You illumine the soul's path with the blazing touch, torch of your flame, Krishna, I'm in your assembly hall, and there you are, standing up. I saw your power. I saw your expansions of Krishna in 16,000. I've seen it all, and I know that I cannot understand you or your potencies or your plans. So what does he do? He surrenders and prays. That's what surrender means. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, I no longer want to enjoy separately from you. Please engage me in your service. How can I serve you? How can I serve you? How can I serve you? Narada says, basically, you're performing a pastime right now, and your pastimes have the power to illumine the world, and I'm so fortunate to be part of this pastime right now. And I surrender to the role that you want me to play. Now, what is that role? You've asked me a question. How are the Pandavas? And I know it has something to do with Darasandha being killed. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this. And he's going to show the other side. Because one side, Krishna Bhune say Jeeva Nadi Mahimukha Te Eva Marat Mayatare Samsaleva Duk. On one side, there are those who forget Krishna and they're always in fear. Now, what is Krishna doing now? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur puts this, he explains Narada's words in his words by saying, I see many people in this world bewildered by your Maya, and therefore they are afflicted, suffering from fear. But I also see many people who are fearless, absorbed in hearing and singing about your glories. There may be some hints in that for us. So Narada has surrendered, which means he's and that's why he's Narada Muni. Because he's desiring to participate, to play, to serve in Krishna's pastimes, and he doesn't know where it's going to take him exactly. But he's ready to join, to serve with great devotion as Krishna wants. Nonetheless, O Supreme Truth, because Krishna's desire is going to be fulfilled, and he knows that he's going to participate in it, which is the nimitta karan bhava samya satya. This is the desire of a devotee to be used in Krishna's service. This is where the pleasure comes from for a devotee, to be instrumental in Krishna's will. But so far, Krishna hasn't really done anything except ask Narada some simple question. How are the Pandavas? You know everything. And he's not going to do very much. He's going at the same time to do everything. Nonetheless, O Supreme Truth, playing the part of a human being, I shall tell you what your devotee, Yudhisthira Maharaj, the son of your father's sister, intends to do. You've asked about this, I will play my part for your pleasure. For your pleasure, Krishna. I will do this for your pleasure. He says about Yudhisthira and what he wants. Desiring unrivaled sovereignty, Parameshya, King Yudhisthira intends to worship you with the greatest fire sacrifice, the Rajasuya. Please bless his endeavor. Yudhisthira wants to retain sovereignty over everything with no rival. But we just heard that someone was acting as his rival, and that person was an enemy of Krishna's, and he was arrogant, and he had imprisoned 20,000 devotees of Krishna. And Yudhisthira wanted to be the unrivaled sovereign. Tension immediately. And every good resolved. First of all, let's just talk about Eunice's desire. Now, if I desire unrivaled sovereignty, you're already starting to laugh, I know that. but I do, in a little realm that I, of the bubble of my mind, I want my own little kingdom. But everyone would laugh because it's such a materialistic, ridiculous desire. Is Eudistir being materialistic? No. And this is described when describing the Brajagopikas. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes in the fourth chapter of Adilila that when you're dealing with these greatest of devotees, these greatest of pure devotees, whatever they do, whatever it appears like they're doing, they're looking in the mirror, they're dressing themselves, the Brajagopikas. Nothing is for them. Everything is for Krishna's pleasure. It doesn't make a difference what it appears to be on the surface. Everything is born out of the fire of their love for Krishna. And it is like that with Yudhisthira. So knowing that a devotee, like when Prabhupada, when he arrived, I think it was in Melbourne, the devotees arranged a Rolls Royce to pick him up. And when the reporters, oh, they love those kind of things because they're thinking that here is a person who has a cult who's exploiting all the followers and he's on top enjoying. So therefore, they go like this and they find really clever questions to ask someone like Prabhupada, and they asked him, your followers have arranged for you a Rolls Royce and you preach renunciation. They've arranged for you a Rolls Royce. And what did Prabhupada answer? Yes, something to the effect of, what was it directly? Because they didn't have a better one. That's why they had to arrange this mechanical, ridiculous vehicle called a Rolls Royce. There was no gold, he didn't say flower airplane or something. Prabhupada was not defeatable. One time, and the reporters were so, they tried always to catch Prabhupada, and they never could catch Prabhupada. They asked him, why did you come on Pan Am, the airlines? I read in your books that there are ways to travel by flower, magic carpet, and by pigeons. Why did you come on Pan Am Airlines? And Prabhupada said, to be one with you. The reporter said, this Mataji reporter, well, not Mataji, but this lady, not lady exactly, this female reporter asked Prabhupada, why do you have a shaved head? And Prabhupada said, why do you wear a short skirt? It's better to have a cool head and warm legs. He's so charming too, she could only laugh. So however the a pure soul does, it's born out of purity and it's born for service. So Yudhisthira desired to become the unrivaled sovereign. And he wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. And later on, so many reasons will be revealed that are all pure. Narada continues, O Lord, exalted demigods and glorious kings, they are eager to see you. They will all come to that best of sacrifices. Shravanat kirtanat dhyanat pujante anti vaisayanaha tava brahma vayesya yesha kim chab yim marshinaha. O Lord, because one may say, well, I'll give you this permission to do this, But why must I go to the sacrifice? And the answer is given in this verse. O Lord, even outcasts are purified. Anyone, everyone. This is following the concept of that Christian's fame and glories of his pastimes. Even outcasts are purified by hearing and chanting your glories and meditating upon you, the absolute truth. What to speak of those who see and touch you? So come to the Rajasuya sacrifice, Narada is saying. Come to Yudhisthira's sacrifice. He wants you to come so that everyone will have the opportunity to see you in person and even touch you. My dear Lord, you are the symbol of everything auspicious. Your transcendental name and fame is spread like a canopy, something that protects the entire universe, including the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. And then the Ganga is glorified as also purifying the universe. Wherever it goes, the Ganga purifies the universe. So he's explaining the universal purity, purifying capacity of Krishna's name and fame and pastimes. And that's what Narada Muni said. Now at this point, Sukadev Goswami continues, and we're almost at the end of today's class, at the end of the 70th chapter of Krishna's Daily Activities. Sukadev Goswami said, when his supporters, the Yadavas, remember, there are two things going on. The kings, they're suffering. They're suffering. They may not be the purest, but they're devotees, and they're suffering. Captured by Jarasandha. And they're begging Krishna to come and save them. And then Narada Muni comes. This great sage comes and says, Yudhisthira, your devotee, is requesting you to come so he can perform this Rajasuya sacrifice to become sovereign of the world. So first question is, how did the Yadavas, who have heard all this, the assembly full of warriors, what are they thinking? So Sukadeva says, when his supporters, the Yadavas, objected to this proposal made by Narada, out of eagerness to fight with and defeat Jarasandha, Lord Keshava turned to his servant Uddhava and smiling addressed him with fine words. So Krishna says, what can I do? Here are the kings who are requesting me. And here, Yudhisthira, through Narada Muni, is requesting me. What should I do? And he turns to Uddhava and says, you are indeed our best eye. You are our closest friend. You know perfectly the relative value of various kinds of counsel. You are so expert. Therefore, please tell us, what should be done in this situation? We trust your judgment, and we shall do as you say. Krishna has committed himself in advance to do whatever Uddhava recommends. This is Krishna dealing with his devotees. The Pandavas are his devotees. And the kings are his devotees. And he's leaving it to Uddhava to decide how to deal with this. Jiva Goswami says, and why is Uddhava so trusted? And what makes one not trustworthy? Please listen to Srila Jiva Goswami's comment. With great affection, Krishna encouraged Uddhava to speak. You are the Yadava's eye. Since you act for our benefit without personal motive, and you are expert, you know how to give counsel. More than the eye, you have the ability to see the future in distant place by mantra, but you will not act out of your own self-interest. Your concern for the Yadava's is perfect. Side any other concern. consideration. So therefore, I trust your words. And not only do I trust your words, we will do exactly as you say. He is surrendering to Uddhava. Jiva Goswami continues and makes that point even clearer. Krishna is surrendering to his devotees. He says, for the reasons I have mentioned, you should say which of these two actions should be done first. Don't think we will fail to act on your words. We will faithfully accept your decision and we will carry it out. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, requests surrender in the Bhagavad Gita, but he is surrendering to his devotees who are pure. And then the final verse. Thus requested by his master, who although omniscient, who knows everything, acted as if he was confused, perplexed, and didn't know what to do. This is Krishna's pastimes, exhibited to interact with his devotees and to spread his protective fame like a canopy that covers the universe. Uddhava took this order on his head and replied as follows. And Jiva Goswami says, when hearing this request from Krishna, like Narada Muni, he said, I will surrender to you what you want. And he spoke, even though you know everything yourself, you know what the Pandavas are doing, you are the Supreme Lord, but I want to be instrumental in your pastime. So Uddhava similarly joined his hands and with great devotion placed both his hands and Krishna's order on his head. He surrendered. Okay. We have 15 more minutes. That means we have time for questions. Does anyone have any questions? And then actually we'll have 10 and then 5 minutes to speak. Yes, Maharaj.
70. Yes. Chitta, I have one question. There was this thing, your pastime, illumine the world and show the conditioned souls something like how to move forward. I would like to know how the pastimes help us conditioned souls to move forward. There is a lesson in the pastimes which we can see and which gives us higher understanding. How do you understand this? They illumine the path or illumine the world in a practical way. I'm asking of a normal Hare Krishna Hare Rama devotee in the year 2000, where are we? And on the calendar 22, we shall read the pastimes of Krishna, and then we know what to do in our troubled little bubbles.
Troubled bubble. Yes, that describes it very well. The troubled bubble. It's a t-shirt. Would you like to join me in my trouble bubble? No. My answer is yes. This is specifically what this is going to teach us, this pastime in particular. Different pastimes will teach different things, perhaps. And some of the pastimes, especially in Sri Vrindavan Dham, they just teach, in a simple sense, how wonderful it is to be interacting with Krishna, who is the all-knowing Lord, but yet is playing with his devotees like a simple coward boy in that bewildered Lord Brahma even. How is this possible that Krishna is Yajnabhuk, who's eating the food from his coward boyfriend? So there's just some of the pastimes are just play. And we can extract some philosophy that this is bewildering. The there are many, many pastimes, and this is specifically mentioned in this pastime, where there's such lessons, and the lessons are to move forward specifically, as was said earlier in the verse, how to get ourselves free from material existence. So two things are going on. One is to be absorbed in thought of Krishna and talking about Krishna instead of all the things we tend to talk about and talk about instead Krishna and Krishna's service. So that in itself is illumining the consciousness. When we chant Krishna's names, the consciousness is illumined. When we hear Krishna's pastimes, they're illumined. Our consciousness is illumined. When we hear about Srila Rupa Goswami and the kind of person he was, our consciousness is illumined. And as you said, you know, we would love to meet such a person. This would be the highlight of our life, to meet such a person, certainly. So there's that aspect by hearing. But some of the pastimes, and this one is really like that, there's so many instructions for us how we can move our way through material life into leading a fully spiritual life, even if we are in a difficult situation, as the kings were in a difficult situation. This pastime will reveal that step by step by step. But obviously I'm not going to say everything now, because then everyone would not even bother coming to the next classes. And then what would I do? Is that okay? Any other questions? But at the end of this class, we should take 5 minutes to break into small groups again and discuss what you have learned about the journey through material energy just from this first interaction with this pastime through the process of hearing. So we'll take some moments after this to actually hear from each other what inspirations and thoughts that you have gathered from this pastime that will be helpful for you. But first, a question. Yes. And then next. Yes.
It's very intellectually illuminating, at the same time, heart-touching, the way you have explained this last time, Prabhuji.
I really surprised myself, to tell you the truth. When I read it, I know the story. I taught it to 40 years ago. I was teaching the story to children. But when one actually reads it and tries to understand, why is this word used and not that word? Why do you try to say time? What is the effect of time? Because they'll refer to it again and again, and watch for the repetitions. When we read in a thoughtful way, not when we read, trying to understand the actual message that the empowered genius of Srila Vyasadeva was giving us, this is what happens. This is not done. Literature you read before you go to sleep, to put you to sleep. This is deep, instructive meaning. Our life is at stake. Yes, I'm sorry.
My question is quite related to this same point that you mentioned. I have heard speakers speak intellectually on Prabhupada's books, and sometimes it feels very dry. I mean, when you intellectualize things. And there are other speakers who speak full of rasa, but then it doesn't have much philosophy or content. But when I hear you, I see a very good combination of both. There is rasa, at the same time there is deep thought and analysis. So my question is, how do we read books and speak on them in such a way that both the philosophy and the rasa are in a very good, healthy balance?
You're asking me. Okay, how I do it.
Yes, how do you do that?
First thing is, before I prepare a lot for classes, and I read it in the way I just teacher said. Then before the class, I put myself into complete anxiety. And then I prayed to Gurus, and I prayed to Prabhupada, and I prayed to Gonatai. Any other questions? I think, I can't do this. Look at these people are sitting here. These wonderful devotees are sitting here. They expect me to say something of value. No, I can't do it. That's how I do it. Actually, I don't put myself into complete anxiety. I'm naturally an anxiety.
This
is such a responsibility. You all come. Yes.
You were speaking about the mentality that we think I have a better idea how we should work, that we always have some plan. If you could speak a little more how to overcome this kind of mentality.
Yeah, I think that this is, I made it sound a little black and white in one sense, this Krishna's plan and my idea. And we shouldn't do our idea, maybe, or we think we understand things that we don't actually understand what Krishna wants to. But it's not quite like that. And the subtleties involved. And how to negotiate between the subtleties of whether Krishna's given me this idea and how. And how I should execute it. Or should I just, how do I know if it's what Krishna wants or not? Sometimes we present, I present it either this way or that way. But generally speaking, there's so much gray in between the black and the white. And you don't know. And I'll speak about this later because it's an interesting topic. I saw Prabhupada do this in His Holiness Guru Maharaj will testify to this, that Prabhupada in Bombay, for example, that's the example I always think of. You know, just depend on Krishna, just depend on Krishna, just depend on Krishna. But then when it came to the struggle, Prabhupada wanted to fight. He really wanted to fight. And not only did he want to fight, he wanted to win. And he used everything that he possibly could to win that battle. So with Prabhupada, we understand that it was Krishna inspiring him. Not just Krishna gave him the intelligence, but it was Krishna who was inspiring him. But we don't know often. So, perhaps we can speak about that a little more in this later, and how to proceed when we don't really know what Krishna's desire is. Is that the question that you're asking? Does that address it? Yeah. Because if Krishna's given you intelligence, and you know, you have to use it in Krishna's service. It's his gift to you. But instead of answering more questions now, because if I go late, I'm going to be in so much trouble, you have no idea, because you know who the next speaker is, Mataji. She's already warned me. Gently, of course. You know. Oh, yes, yeah, she's in the back waving her hand, just reminding me. So just take, Mataji, can we go 2 minutes late, please? Okay, you have 3 minutes to talk about what you learned from this Bhagavatam. Yes, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. I'll talk for 3 minutes only.